This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at REACH 2015, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders on March 19 and 20, 2015.
Well, the first instructions I got as a few of you came in here, Lyndon said, keep me awake. But I'm going to fail right out of the chute here. You see my slides are white, no fancy colors. Boring title. I purposely tried to disinterest those of you that are on the edge. You know, seven principles of leadership. Curious, the young men here today. A life of leadership ahead here for you all. Some of you gray hair like me. But yeah, we'll see if to keep you awake here for the first 5 minutes. Got a story. They were. Once there was this shepherd that was herding his sheep down kind of a back road from one pasture to the next. And a person in a car was coming the other way and had to stop till he got up to the next greener pasture. And as he was bringing his sheep up to the next pasture, the fellow got out of his car, and he said, hey, this is, I've never seen this before. He said, I've always been curious about shepherding and sheep, and matter of fact, I even always had a hankering to have one or two, kind of as a hobby farm. He said, but tell me something. He said, how do you get those sheep to follow you like that? And the shepherd said, well, how do you think I do it? And the fellow said, no. He said, forget the question. He said, actually, he said, if I could tell you how many sheep you have, would you let me take one home? The shepherd kind of stepped back and thought, what kind of game is this? And he knew exactly how many he had, and he thought, you know, this guy, not a chance. He's just going to guess. He said, sure. I'm up to the game. You can guess how many sheep I have. Let me take one. The guy glanced over and he said, his flock, and he said, let me go back to my car. He goes back to his car and he pulls out his smartphone and Googles and clicks on his location and counted them. Stuck it back in his pocket and came back to the shepherd and said, my guess is you got 174 sheep. And the shepherd said, I can't believe it. You're right. I got 174. He said, you win. Take your pick. The man picked one of the animals and was walking toward his car. And shepherd said, hey, if I could guess what occupation you are, could I get my animal back? Paul said, hey, fair game here. He ain't going to guess my occupation. The shepherd said, you're a leadership consultant. The guy said, how did you figure that out? Well, he said, see, he said, first of all, you showed up uninvited. Secondly, you didn't have a clue about the answer to the question you asked. And he said, thirdly, you don't know anything about sheep. You want to take a sheep home and you took my dog. Leadership does not tolerate imposters. You're going to fake it, they'll figure it out. Moral of the story. Now you can go to sleep. Last story. A few clarifications here to get started. I'm not presenting a theology of leadership. That needs to be done. Connect the biblical passages to these principles. Okay? Don't have time or just decided not to. It could be done. Should be done. This is not an inspirational except for the first 5 minutes. Okay, it's technical. It's meant to be educational, informative. It's really built, this is really built for the, maybe not the seasoned leader, but at least, you know, if you're young, don't leave young guys, but this is going to be a little heavy. Just it's meant to be educational. It's meant to connect with those in the trenches that have pulled up on the yoke of leadership and found its difficulty. I'm pulling from several books. I should have had these out here, but I just want to wave them. Backdrop is many, many books. Some of you are book readers. I know we got a book reader in the midst here. Lyndon every now and then throws a book at me. And I've done my due diligence in reading 50 to 75 business books probably, but I've ended up with three books that I would say stand head and shoulders above all the books that I've read. And the three books I'm pulling from here, there are others that may be better that take a slice of the leadership. I'm going after a model today. Okay, so my seven is trying to cover bandwidth. And some books, you know, on leadership, they take a piece. Somebody might write a piece on integrity in leadership or whatever. three books here, I'm just waving here. Leadership Challenge by Krauss and Posner. Probably the most widely used in the MBA programs. 25 years old, fourth edition. For the educational student, it's a good read. I understand the guys are Christian, but it doesn't come through, but the principles are there. Secondly, Seven Pillars of Servant Leadership, written from a Christian perspective. Good read. Lastly, The Serving Leader by John Stalwart. And all these guys have probably written other books, but John has written about 10. I'm a student of John's last 5 years, taking his executive training. His fingers are all over my presentation. lives south or in Pittsburgh. I'm north of Pittsburgh, so I've been able to learn under him. Owe a lot to him. Your guide, that the handout, is not in line with my, it's a reference thing for after class. Okay, so just stay with me, PowerPoints, and that's for digging in and going beyond the class here. behind my seven principles, I'm actually building or have already built a leadership assessment tool. It's in Excel form right now, but in a year we hope to have it on the web, so we're using the Excel form to do the beta testing and have a few people take it, but in a year I hope these seven principles you can actually test your strengths and weaknesses on down the road. And so this is not just a presentation for me. I've been working on this for about 3 years, my assessment tool to help us measure leadership strengths and weaknesses. And so it's kind of a bringing it all together in a in a presentation here today. We all leave awake. We all have an impact. We all have a result with our leadership. I've got a couple questions to get us started here before we start going through a few slides. About 15 questions. I'm going to read them off. Listen carefully. Are the people you lead, are the people you serve, becoming stronger, gaining vision and wisdom, deepening their beliefs, values, growing stronger in giftings, skills, expertise? Are they filled and overflowing with love, kindness, growing more emotional, sensitive, intelligent? Are they becoming more trustworthy, trusting, securely connected in relationship, proud to be identified with you, the leader? Are they becoming good planners, strategic, adept at designing effective systems? Are they learning to listen well, solve problems, restore the broken? Are they becoming freer from being dependent on you, capable of leading out, able to train others, organize people, and delegate responsibility? Are they developing their own sense of worth, purpose, and calling as a result of your leadership? Are they more likely themselves to become servants to others, sacrificial and generous toward others, when they have in their hand the power to be the master? These are the right kind of questions to ask ourselves. Whatever your theory or model of leadership that you hold, It's really quite simple. Servant leadership is primarily about people and secondarily about products and services. Servant leadership always makes the welfare of people a significant part of its mission. It is people we lead and serve, and together we work. The more mature they become, the more excellent in the work, and the more capable they become as leaders. The best organizations grow their own leaders. They have top-notch people because they're producing leaders. Lesser organizations cherry-pick leaders from other organizations because they're not growing. Are you in the better league, or are you in need of other organizations to actually feed yours? Because all you're doing is producing products and services. Servant leadership is ultimately about growing people first. Are you growing yours? Now, we're going to be discussing these seven principles, but this can be very misleading. Qualifier here as we start. Leadership is ultimately about following. Christian leadership is ultimately about following a person, not merely principles. If we reduce leadership, Christian leadership, to principles, we minimize our capacity to lead. Relationship with Christ is at the heart of Christian leadership. If we take the principles without the person, we cut out the heart of leadership. But this is exactly, and I'll critique a book I waved here, this is exactly what these guys have done. They're Christians. But to make this fly in MBA programs, you know what they had to do? They had to take out the reference to the person. So if you're going to pick this up, they got his principles. That's why it's a high flyer. This stuff is powerful, but not near as powerful if they'd have kept the person and the principles. So we're talking principles today, and we're not taking the time to weave all the person and principles together. But every principle flows from the person of Christ. He's the exact embodiment of and full expression of each principle. Now, for sake of those of you that learn by images rather than words, I chose a tree as a graphic here to kind of carry some of the freight of these seven principles. And I chose a tree for several reasons. One is it's so symbolic of leadership. One aspect that if you're going to grow in leadership, it's going to be like a tree. There's no fast track to growing up in leadership. It's slow. Trees grow slow. Regardless of how bad you want to be mature. Maybe some of you were in Merle Burkholder's class. I think he had four stages of leadership. John Maxwell has five. Most people never make it to the fifth stage. Very, very challenging to grow as a leader. The height and size of the tree is always in proportion to the roots. You don't sink deep roots, you don't have a big tree. So true of leadership. And a leader grows strong and tall by the blessing of adversity. Bring on the winds to sway that tree. Bring on a little bit of dry weather. What happens? The roots have to go down, or you quit. So symbolic of the leaders that grow the strongest and the tallest. Lastly, leadership yields its fruit in its season, but not without prior pruning and a good gardener. We won't be talking about those aspects. We all want at the end of the day the fruit. The leftover result of just great leadership. And you might have your six words that you'd put up there that would fit your organization. My perspective here is going to come maybe a little bit more from the business model of leadership. Nonprofit, though, I hope it's all relevant. Not so much church ministry. So profits, productivity, customers, market share, sales. You're going to likely want that at the end of the day. Or maybe on the people side, you want great people, you want to be an influential organization in your community, you want to grow the kingdom, build the kingdom, you want to bring joy and shalom and overall prosperity to the kingdom of God. Doesn't just happen. Some people, when they think about leadership, you know, they're just, They're just low-hanging fruit. Got this vision to lead and be a leader and accomplish this, and all they're thinking about is fruit. You don't end up with a fruit with that kind of a tree there, do you? Takes roots. And sometimes those roots won't take you very far. Sometimes it takes, depending on how tall your tree's going to grow, you're going to need a taproot. You have wing roots that give it stability, but the taproot gives it the ability to go much stronger and handle much more challenge. So we're going to have a few of the principles. Three of the seven principles are going to be root principles. The other four are going to be trunk and branches. And I hope that you can see the difference between the two as we go along here. So here's my seven principles, seven categories, seven elements, seven strengths. Think about it or talk about it several different ways. And I want you to note, just as an overview, and then we're going to dive into the seven, note a couple things here. Root principles, and there's three in my model, are less tangible. Sometimes people call the root principles kind of the soft side of leadership. Or some people would call it more governance rather than operational. The trunk and branch principles are more tangible. Above the ground, easy to get your finger around, more operational. Yesterday, for example, Bill talked about leadership as mission or leadership and mission, and he talked about three very fundamental realities of business: vision, values, and mission. Well, my four on top there are more mission. Underground are more the values and vision. And I have a third there that we'll get to. So Bill already laid the premise here for what I'm talking about. Now we'll slow down here then and... dive into what I'm going to do here is I'm going to go over the root principles real fast, slow up, and then do the fourth trunk and branch principles a little bit slower, and then come back and spend time on the three root principles. There's where we just don't have time to do all seven with depth. I'm going to just give you an overview just very quickly here of the root principles, a little more thorough, trunk and branches. And then, if we have time, we're going to drill deep on those three root principles and hopefully have a little time for discussion. Let's think vision and values. Bill did well on it yesterday. I think of them as the wing roots. They're not the deepest, but they are roots. Near the surface, spread out in all directions for stability. We'll come back to it. So vision and start with values a bit. Exemplifies and clarifies and aligns core values. Lives it out, first of all, but is able to articulate and clarify for others. And lastly, bring the organization into alignment with stated and desired values. The most difficult, easier to talk, isn't it, than do. Very, very important. Jim Collins in Built to Last said this: enduring successful companies adhere strictly to a fundamental set of principles and values that guide their behaviors and decisions over time, thus preserving the essence of the organization. Doesn't sound very operational. Man, I want to run a hammer. I want to make something happen. This is under the ground. If you're not interested in this, though, I'd say stay away from leadership. Let's move quickly on. The visionary leader casts vision, exercises foresight, and inspires a shared purpose. If you don't know where you're going, any road can take you there. You've heard that. Great quote. Do you see more than just what's in front of you? The only lead a leader has is his lead on others, being ahead, but not so far ahead that they're there you're out of touch. Vision. Let's spend just a little bit of time on what I'm calling the taproot. The taproot anchors and secures the organization. Storms, hell, and high water may come and can take away your operational side. Okay, but they cannot take away your love for your people and your organization. Many waters, the scripture says, cannot quench love. This concept is actually catching on in a few organizations. Recently, Ken Blanchard wrote a book with Southwest Airlines on this thing of love. Their New York stock ticket, three letters, LUV, intentionally. And they're trying to develop some culture and some values around this thing of love. Southwest Airlines, an unusual airline, is the only airline in U.S. history that has not declared bankruptcy. And this is one of their values they're working on in the last 5 years. This shouldn't, though, be foreign to us. We're going to come back to this. Fosters love, identity, and trust. What's that have to do with business? Sounds like church life or something, doesn't it? Nonprofits are supposed to do that. You know?
Business have to care ourselves with this?
I'm suggesting it's the taproot. You want a tall tree? You want a healthy tree? You want that fruit, that low-hanging fruit? Let's move on. We're going to come back to those three. Now we're going to just slow up just a little bit here. And one of the things that I'm going to be doing is I'm giving seven principles, and in your handout, and don't necessarily just don't go there, stay here. The seven principles each have three practices that flow out of the principle to try to give put some flesh on the bones. Sometimes principles are general, obviously. Seven would be pretty general. And so I'm suggesting three practices, the way that could look as you made application to the principle within a leadership perspective. And so I'm starting here with the administrative leader, which is, in my model here, it's the trunk. Now we're above ground, okay, so it's a little more tangible. And we're going to dive in just a little bit. So the three points under the administrative leader, or the just a category of administration, is exercises and delegates authority and responsibility according to strengths. Two, provides structure, organizes and coordinates people. And three, manages and conserves resources and holds people accountable for results. Tell you a story. If you're studying leadership language at all, you've come across Peter Drucker. Dead and gone now, but he's known to be the father of modern management. Don't know when he died, 90 or so, last 20 years or so. He really led the way to some of the leadership development that we have today. And in one of his last lectures, when he was an old man, he was summarizing his years of leadership wisdom, and there was a Q&A at the end of the day, and the question came up, Mr. Drucker, what would you say is the number one leadership principle that you draw from when you think back over your years? That's just a mean question. It's like, you know, good grief, you gotta pull through. And he was sitting, they say, on his chair. He was that old. He was speaking from a chair. And he leaned forward to think. And his head was forward, and it was just quiet. He was thinking. And they said a minute went by. And it gets uncomfortable, right? This guy's supposed to be a speaker, not some meditation. And then it went a little longer, and a few of them were starting to think, well, maybe he just died right here. The question. Well, actually, it didn't. He finally perked up. And his answer was short. He said, the most important question in leadership is who does what and how do we empower them? Who does what and how do we empower them?
He was talking about Trump, the structure of authority. Now he was, keep in mind, he was a father of, they called it management back then, a bit more than leadership, and it was more operational oriented. The three principles that I'm calling root have been, I think, developed a little bit more in business literature in the last 20 years. But he paved the way for some. So Drucker was hitting Trump insight there and nailing what I would say the number one above the ground. And in servant leadership, and I'm using servant leadership as a it's used out there and then springs from a biblical perspective, cares very much about how you use the authority that's in your hand. You know the horror stories of what a person can do with authority. And particularly, business authority is not some kind of less potent an authority. Sometimes we think, you know, those in church authority, it can be dangerous or whatever. If you would have lived in the days of the early 1900s, before the labor unions corrected some of the business leaders that had lots of power, we think labor unions are kind of a pain and unnecessary. No. You ought to read Andrew Carnegie's story and Henry Frick when the steel days in Pittsburgh. There's a book out, I'll Meet You in Hell, written after these two men were dead. Andrew was the CEO. Henry Frick was the president, running the steel mills out there in the steel heyday. And it's quite a title. I had to read it. I was touring Frick's mansion down in Pittsburgh, and took the book home. And every business owner ought to read it. If you're struggling all with misusing your authority, the darkest, most bloody story of worker management fight and shedding of blood is out there on Pittsburgh's soil. 36 men lost their lives in a fight over working conditions, called the Homestead Battle. Thousands of workers, big business, but in the end, Andrew Carnegie is known by the nonprofits as what? Wonderful and benevolent. He was very charitable. Gave it all away. But who's forgotten? Who produced them funds? Who worked for $2 a day? While Carnegie peaked out in the early 1900s at his best year was it 20 million? Profits, why paid $2 an hour, horrible working conditions. Nonprofits don't see that, do they? They say, you know, bless you. Misuse of authority. The trunk of your tree makes a lot of difference. Let's move on to the coaching leader. Or you could say the leader that develops people. Think of this at two levels. Number one, it's operationally, you need to train people for the job. That's kind of obvious. And you can be really weak there. And you get a whole slew of problems. You don't do training well. Secondly, you can go a step beyond that and say, you know, we're going to actually develop people beyond the technical skills for our products and services. And an example of that a company is doing, or an organization that's doing that, represented here is the Beachy nursing home model, and I particularly know Ken Nisley, and now Phil is administrator. You know, while they're a nonprofit structure, do you aware that they produce profits with their model? Their secret is not that they're just nonprofit. You can almost just forget that they produce profits with healthcare, care for the elderly. And while they're caring for the elderly, what are they doing with the young people that are coming there?
Mentoring.
Doing more than just training how to take care of the older lady? More than that? Absolutely. They got this great agreement. And that is, tell you what, if you come with us for 2 years, it won't be anything. Sorry. All this BS. It's good for your soul. it's good. We're working on making money.
But I tell you what, instead of you making money,
we're going to build into your soul some development. And they've got an intentional program of developing people. And the boys camp are doing the same thing. They're working with these 10-year-olds that are in trouble. But what's happening to them 20-year-olds that have 10 of them to take care of? I mean, tell you, those boys are sweating. They're growing two sets of boys. I've seen some of the 23 and 4-year-olds that come out of the camp system. They grew as fast as a tree could grow without busting the bark. I mean, if dads can't handle one boy, they expect these two 20-year-olds to manage these 10. Great discipling opportunities. Well, if nonprofits can do this, and in the healthcare industry make a profit, you say, well, we could if we didn't have any profit. Hey, some of them are building people while making profits.
Servant leadership goes as far as you can. It's about people first. Okay? And think beyond drop training. Again, maybe you're a small tree and you can't do it. Somebody needs to be in this mission. May more businesses put some of their profits, pull some of their profits that would go to charity and put them in the people that are helping run the organization. Both are good investments. You nonprofit guys aren't going to like me here. Because you don't just accomplish this in thin air and no resources. You're going to develop people. It's expensive. Those of you that are trying to correct the flawed people, it's not easy. It's a lot of work when people are broken. People that are productive on a job typically aren't that broken. And they're ripe to grow. We just ignore the opportunity. We just have this mindset, well, you know, it's just money for work. Well, that's a pretty low view of leadership. John Maxwell said this, keep your people dumb and maybe keep them forever, or develop them and risk losing them to those organizations that don't know how to grow people. Every products and service organization, I think, ought to have a secondary mission. Some call it their higher purpose. And that is, the higher purpose has something to do with people. How well are you doing at your higher purpose? If you're not, then you're not within the servant leader continuum. Let's move on. Did I cover 1, 2, 3? Committed to personal growth. Explores and identifies other people's strength, teaches and coaches. A lot could be said there. Let's go to the second one, strategic leader. So you got people in the right place. You've empowered them. Trunk principles. Secondly, this is above ground, operationally, you've trained them. Better yet, you've developed them a bit. All right, now, leadership includes strategic, and within strategic, I mean strategic systems and execution. This is a big one. Winston Churchill said this, he who fails to plan is planning to fail. Strategic leaders draft strategic plans. Some of them can do it in their head. The best of them do it on paper. Sometimes you can do good strategic planning verbally, small company. Larger companies need to draft these out, set their challenging goals. But it's more than just having a plan, having the right goals for your company. It's having the systems in place that make achieving these goals achievable. You can have great goals, but if you don't put the mechanisms in place to getting there, you have to work awful hard to get there. You become a systems builder, and work becomes, is it fair to say, easy? At least by comparison. Great systems avoid an acre of chaos.
Problems.
Kills
kills drama. That's a great way to say it. Systems make expert work attainable by the common person. But it takes systems, procedures, steps, training. Forget systems, and you're going to hire experts. Systems fit with strategic planning, create systems, which your end up fruit, your fruit is execution. It actually gets done. Execution is a systematic process of rigorously discussing the hows and the whats, questioning and adjusting, but tenaciously following through. Running out of time here, let's keep moving. The serving leader, we could say this, the problem-solving leader. Well, the whole thing of problem-solving, listening, solves problems, and restores. I'm going to jump in here at number two and talk about number two first. Listens for feedback and acknowledges human brokenness and is easy to be entreated. You know, if you're going to have a mission, you're going to do something in life, you're going to jump into leadership, you're going to have problems. Okay, best of plans reduces them, but you can't foresee everything that's coming. You're going to have problems. But depending on your culture, depending on your beliefs and values in relation to problems, you can get mired down when problems come your way. Is it okay to have caused a problem in your company, in your organization? Is it okay to have made a mistake? Have you all agreed that you're going to be easy to entreat when you're at fault? We have a no-fault philosophy in organizations and in leadership that you always identify the problem only by what happened and not who's responsible. That's all about the inability for a person to process appropriate shame. Our world does not know what to do with shame. That actually, good shame actually turns you around. Try repenting without shame. Oh, I did something wrong. Okay, it's good to know that. I won't do that again. Likelihood you'll do it again if you said all that without any shame. We have a no-fault mentality that does not turn our hearts. As though you can change your behavior without your heart. It's okay for something to be your fault, is it not? Well, that all depends on what you do with this culture of problems. You know, if you might lose your job if you make a mistake, is it okay to be easy to entreat and to admit that, or even come to the boss and say, you know, I made this mistake here. You'd never known this, I wouldn't tell you, but here's what happened. Is that the culture you want? You want all your employees hiding from it? Because, no, we can't have any problems here. An open, in a transparent approach to problems is a powerful way to lead, because problems are going to come. This whole principle is really built off the idea of salvation. Okay, in that there's a part of leadership is restoring broken things in people. And you got to be good at restoring broken things in people. If you're trying to run an organization without problems, you don't have a redemptive model. You assume you're in Garden of Eden or somewhere other than this place. You got to really be strong on solving problems. You know, a company that has taken this principle right to the top is Toyota. Toyota has branded a model of leadership based on this principle. They're very open to problems. In your organization, if you gave someone a whistle and they were allowed to blow it every time in a day that they experienced a problem that's irritating and frustrating and ought to be fixed, how many whistles would they blow? Meaning, how many problems are people up against that just, well, that's just the way it is around here. And nobody has the freedom to just pop up and say, you know, could this get changed? I was on the phone the other day with Dallas in AgSalt, my company I work with. And we're at the end of our season. We've worked hard through the winter. We're in ice melt. We had a great year, great winter, lots of demand. Market just exploded. And we're all sitting back, and I'm serious, we had chaos, we had problems, but we got through it. And Dallas said, you guys did great. And complimenting him, and it's just amazing, great team of guys. But I said, hey, we got. Let's start reflecting. What went wrong that we could actually get fixed in our downtime? We got 3 months here. We're going to start back up in June. I said, what comes to your mind? And Dallas started talking. And Dallas only worked for us here since October. I didn't know some things about Dallas. And he started talking, and he couldn't get stopped. But what he was saying was amazing. This guy is a problem spotter. He was listening. I said, I was on the phone. I said, are you reading off a list? Oh, no. I mean, it was just excellent stuff he was identifying. And at the end, I said, Dallas, you're gifted to spot problems. If we can get every one of these solved, we're going to be a great company. He was gifted at spotting them. He had felt them throughout the year. We didn't have time to fix some of them, okay? But it's like, that should be different. Is there a culture where you talk about what's wrong and learn by mistakes and solve problems and fix relationships? Got to go here. We got about a couple minutes here. Okay, now we're back to, we covered all seven. And I want you to notice above ground here that problem solving is kind of, you start with the trunk, you start with assigning responsibility, you train these people, you develop these people, you have your strategic plan, you have systems, you have executions. Not everything turns out, right? And you end up with problems. But you're kind of at the end of the cycle, up the tree and around, you see that? Problems are this great place to just track things back to where was the weakness. You know, we didn't think very well about that issue, planning. We didn't have any systems in place. That's why we hit the wall there. Oh, you know what? No one was trained to deal with that issue. Now we're back around to coaching. Nobody was assigned to kind of discuss that we ought to do that, and no structure. Nobody took responsibility. There was no who does what. Just when you got a problem, just track it right back around and maybe even drive it underground. The values aren't here to support that kind of expectation. You want this fruit at the end of the day? We don't got the roots. Problems is kind of this end of the trail. Just take it right back around till you find what produced that problem. Toyota does a great job at using that method. Now, this is where we're going to go a little deeper here and try to stay with me. I'm trying to make these seven principles compelling. Hey, but I didn't suck these out of my thumb. Okay? I want to show you the three books I held up here and their language for these seven principles. These seven principles are universally accepted, been tried and true. I'm not trumpeting something new here. Okay, so the seven strengths of leadership is my column. You recognize the words there? Values-driven, visionary, serving, coaching, encouraging, strategic, and administrative. Those are the five words. The three of them there that are the roots are encouraging, values-driven, and vision. Think of my roots versus trunk and branches. On the right is leadership challenge. Okay, they have five categories. Okay, they have different words, but I want you to show you they have five of my seven. And then they craft all theirs in phrases, and they have, they're a little more colorful. So model the way is their word for values. And of course, inspire a great vision, visionary. You see that? Enable others to act and coaching. Seven pillars is on the far right. Person of character, values, foresight, vision. Very simple. Same category. They don't have a category for problem solving. But put people's first is coaching and et cetera. You see the categories are across there. And then John Stalwart, again, John Stalwart has five categories. Not everyone has seven. Okay? But those three other three models have helped me put together these seven. Some of them have some of them missing. And John in particular, I feel I'm a student of John. He admittedly pulled out strategic systems and execution out of his model just to concentrate it around people. And he's up front when he's teaching his business leadership model saying, hey guys, I'm not teaching this in my model, but it's a very real part of leadership. And it's not just a gap that he won't admit to, but it's 5 minutes remaining. Okay, wow. What I wanted to do, and I'm not the most skilled strategic leader. I wanted to drill down deep on the three roots. Okay, we got 5 minutes left. Obviously, we're not going to get it done. We kind of went over them real fast, but I spent more time on the trunk and branches than I did on the roots. I wanted to come back. We're really out of time. I think maybe we ought to just pause there rather than try to do the first one, vision or values or even caring. You could spend time on caring. That's the keynote. That's the taproot. Let's do this instead. Let me close with a quote and just see if there's any questions. Here's what a leader is. And these are the three root characters, three root principles in a metaphor. A leader is a person with a compass in their head, a magnet in their heart, and a towel in their hand. Compass in their head, a magnet in their heart, and a towel in their hand. Vision, they love people, they draw people, and they serve them.
You can make a waffle head like that?
What?
You can make a waffle head like that?
That'd be good, huh?
Yeah,
the kind of the mascot of the. Okay, let's just. We got 2 minutes left or so. Questions, comments. See, did anybody fall asleep? Did pretty well. Thanks.
What do you find is, in the coaching you do? What do you find is the most elitist? What do you find people elitist in our group? In our
okay, that's good. Well. Boy, within Anabaptist business, can I answer more business nonprofit? I got a little experience in both worlds. Here's what I would say: the nonprofits are doing better at root principles. That'd be my judgment. They're working better at values, vision, and caring for people. My experience with Anabaptist Financial 10 years has been huge for me to grow here. That has just pushed me and helped me see some of it. Businesses, though, I think our strongest trait, our strongest character in business has been, even though we've messed it up some, is our businesses, while they stumble with authority and use people, business owners take charge. They take charge, they take responsibility, they make it happen. Now, executing some of that and rounding it out, I would say maybe the trunk principle is maybe one of the stronger business principles. But I'd say businesses have been weak on vision, values, and care.
Not strategic.
Well,
I don't see strategic.
No, I agree. I agree with that
either,
too.
I don't see it either. I don't see it nonprofit.
Well, we haven't taught it. Strategic planning is a skill. Very difficult, actually. Well, no, we shouldn't make it more difficult than it is. It doesn't need to be difficult, but any other question? Time's up. Thanks a lot.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.